What separates those who merely survive financial markets from those who truly thrive? It's not intelligence, pedigree, or even luck. The answer lies in something far more uncomfortable: the willingness to stand utterly alone. Consider Monish Pabrai, an investor who turned $1 million into billions by doing something most would find embarrassing. He became what he calls a shameless copycat. After discovering Warren Buffett through a Peter Lynch book, Pabrai didn't try to reinvent the wheel. He studied Buffett obsessively for decades, attending Berkshire Hathaway meetings for over 20 years, convinced that Buffett and Charlie Munger had discovered the laws of investing as fundamental as physics itself. Yet here's the paradox. Copying Buffett's principles required doing what almost no one else would do: waiting. During 2013, Pabrai made zero investments. His calendar stays virtually empty. He employs no staff. While other managers frantically trade, Pabrai stands like a spearman beside a stream, motionless, waiting for the fat salmon. Success demands we embrace the uncomfortable truth that doing less, much less, often yields more. Standing apart from the crowd isn't just intellectually difficult, it's psychologically excruciating. Sir John Templeton embodied this truth. When the author met him in the Bahamas, the 85-year-old billionaire exercised alone in the ocean, wearing a ridiculous hat with ear flaps, utterly indifferent to appearances. This psychological independence proved essential. The Templeton Growth Fund averaged 14.5% annual returns over 38 years, transforming $100,000 into more than $17 million. In September 1939, as Germany invaded Poland and markets collapsed, the 27-year-old Templeton made history's most audacious contrarian bet. While everyone fled to safety, he invested $100 in each of 104 American companies trading at $1 or less, including 37 already bankrupt. His logic? During war, every product is in demand. 5 years later, he sold for roughly five times his investment. What enabled this? Francois Rochon theorizes successful investors lack the tribal gene, compelling humans to follow the herd. Christopher Davis observes they typically have low emotional intelligence, not from social ineptitude, but because being constantly burdened by an awareness of what everybody else was thinking would be catastrophic for contrarian decisions. Howard Marks, who oversees $120 billion at Oaktree Capital, embraces a Buddhist principle: everything is impermanent. This isn't philosophical abstraction, it's intensely practical. Marks belongs to the I don't know school, believing consistent prediction is impossible. Oaktree doesn't even employ an economist. Instead of forecasting interest rates or economic growth, Marks focuses on something observable: cycles. Markets oscillate like pendulums, expanding and contracting, rising and falling. These patterns are driven by investor psychology veering between euphoria and despondency. Months before the 2008 crisis, Oaktree raised $10.9 billion for the largest distressed debt fund in history. When Lehman Brothers collapsed and everyone panicked, Marks turned bullish. Over 15 weeks, Oaktree invested $500 to $600 million weekly in assets nobody would touch, wagering about $10 billion total and yielding gains of approximately $9 billion. Recognizing impermanence means never positioning ourselves as if current conditions will last forever. This awareness isn't pessimism, it's preparation. Even brilliant investors can fail without structural resilience. Jean-Marie Evillard learned this during the tech bubble. His refusal to own overvalued tech stocks caused his funds to dramatically underperform, losing 70% of shareholders as assets shrank from $6 billion to $2 billion. His employer sold his fund group in early 2000, just before the bubble burst, and vindicated his approach. Sound decisions aren't enough. You need structural independence. Irving Kahn, who worked on Wall Street until his death at 109, distilled his investment philosophy to one word: safety. Financial losses follow brutal mathematics. A 50% loss requires a 100% gain just to break even. Matthew McLennan, who succeeded Evillard, seeks persistent businesses with mundane scarcity. Companies like Colgate, which has held 40% global toothpaste market share since the 1870s. Before the 2020 COVID crash, he held only 71% in stocks, maintaining substantial cash, sovereign debt, and gold positions. True resilience means having the strength to seize opportunities when others are reeling, turning defense into offense. Joel Greenblatt achieved 50% annual returns in his first decade with a 10-word philosophy: figure out what something is worth and pay a lot less. The greatest investors distill wisdom into fundamental principles. Will Danoff, managing Fidelity's $118 billion contra fund, uses three words: stocks follow earnings. This guides his search for best-of-breed businesses that will grow larger in 5 years, leading to massive positions in Berkshire Hathaway, Microsoft, and Amazon. Greenblatt's magic formula uses two metrics: high earnings yield and high return on capital. Backtesting showed 30.8% annual returns versus 12.4% for the S&P 500. Yet DIY investors using his formula earned just 59.4% versus the S&P's 62.7%, while professionally managed accounts returned 84.1%. The culprit? Emotional decisions. Buying when markets rose, selling when they fell. Finding a smart strategy isn't enough. You need discipline to apply it consistently, especially when uncomfortable. The best investors build overwhelming advantages through habits that compound over time. Tom Gaynor's steady approach yielded 12.5% annual returns from 1990 to 2019, turning $1 million into $34.2 million. His edge comes from the aggregation of marginal gains, small improvements in habits and knowledge that compound dramatically over decades. Great investors outthink competitors through continuous learning. Warren Buffett remains a continuous learning machine, reading 5 to 6 hours daily. They also ruthlessly eliminate distractions. Matthew McLennan schedules no morning appointments and keeps Fridays relatively unscheduled for reflection. Chuck Acray finds clarity in rural Virginia, operating from a one traffic light town. Charlie Munger's genius lies in inversion, asking what would guarantee failure, then avoiding those pitfalls. He collects absurdities and inanities as cautionary tales, including his own mistakes. To combat our brain's poor equipment for rational decisions, Munger emulates scientists' extreme objectivity, seeking evidence that might disprove cherished beliefs. He celebrates demolishing his own ideas. Any year that you don't destroy one of your best-loved ideas is probably a wasted year. Money matters, but it's not the essential ingredient of an abundant life. Irving Kahn, who died at 109, exemplified this truth. Despite his fortune, he rode buses to work past age 100, preferred hamburgers to fancy restaurants, and worked in a nondescript office. What he valued most was independence, the freedom to live and work exactly as he pleased. Arnold Vandenberg embodies prosperity transcending wealth. A Holocaust survivor who lost 39 family members, he transformed himself into a successful investor, averaging 14.2% annually over 38 years. Yet he lives modestly, driving practical cars and wearing simple clothes. He feels completely secure financially and considers himself the richest guy in the world because I'm content. His greatest joy comes from helping others, supporting abused children, paying medical bills, and gifting transformative books. His most treasured possession? Thank you letters from people whose lives he's touched. That's my bank account. True wealth isn't measured in portfolio returns, but in the depth of our contentment, the strength of our character, and the positive impact we leave on others. The greatest investment we can make is in becoming people who need less to feel more.